100 hours on the dot. That means that we are going to kick off our AGM of Royal BAM NV. And then I'm going to do this, first of all, by welcoming you all here this afternoon. Let me start with a few proffered apologies, because I've understood that the shuttle bus, that shuttle bus that should have been running from Bunwick to here, was not always working, so some of you had to hang around. Some of you took the initiative to wander over on your own two feet, and I think, really, with the weather being what it is, that was probably no hardship. But anyhow, we are putting our best foot forward, ladies and gentlemen, that at the end of this meeting, you will indeed have a bus to take you back to the station. Okay, having said that, once again, welcome everybody. I'd like to welcome also people from the press, from the Central Works Council, the BAM Group management, fund management, and also the representative of Ernst & Young. You know, they are the auditors who audited our financial statements for 2017. You can see Mr. Hosbaum on my left, who is audit committee chair. Next to him, Ms. Baum, and then Mr. Sheffield. And then looking at the other direction, we have on the left, we have the company secretary, Mr. Beckers, and then Klaus Vester, who's member of the supervisory board. Next to him is Ms. Valentin, also part of the supervisory board. On the right is Mr. Finn Vingerton, Mr. Erik Back sitting next to him. That's our CEO and COO, two members of the executive board. Unfortunately, our CFO can't be here today and extends her apologies. She's got a back problem and has been admitted to hospital for investigations this week. So it's a great shame, because this was going to be her last AGM, actually. And on her behalf, on your behalf, rather, we'd like to wish you her a speedy recovery. This meeting has been convened by a notice placed on the company's website on 7 March 2018. The agenda was attached to this announcement, together with the explanatory notes, and the integrated report and other related documents have been published on the company's website. This is all in English, as is what we generally do now in BAM, and it will also be in the slides that you see. But of course, the meeting will be held in Dutch. In the announcement, it was also stated that for the purpose of this meeting, Wednesday, 21st March 2018, 1800 hours, was the registration deadline, and the announcement also set out the way shareholders could attend the meeting and give proxies. Has everybody here signed the attendance list? If you haven't done so, please do it forthwith. Well, apparently you've all done that, so that's good. I now note that the necessary legal and statutory conditions have been met for the purpose of holding this meeting. And pursuant to Section 2 of Article 27 of the Articles of Association, I appoint Mr. Beckers, Company Secretary, as secretary to take the minutes of this meeting. There will also be a digital recording made to facilitate the minute-taking, and I draw your attention to the fact that interested parties can follow this meeting via a direct video webcast on the company's internet site, complete with simultaneous interpretation into English. So let me also welcome everyone who's watching this via the webcast. Regarding the number of shareholders present and their proxies, together with the total number of votes to be cast, well, that is something I'll be able to tell you more about later. I now move to item two on the agenda, which is the report of the supervisory board about fiscal year 2017. First of all, we do the report, and then I will talk about the implementation of the remuneration policy. Let's move on to the report of the Supervisory Board. You can find that on page 114 of the integrated report. In that report of the Supervisory Board, not only you've got the function and the activities of the Supervisory Board, what the committees of that Supervisory Board have been doing, and the composition of the Supervisory Board and the Executive Board. If you want to ask questions after this presentation, I would ask you to take the microphone, say who you are and for whom you are, or who you're representing. Also, in order to be efficient in this meeting, I would like you to restrict yourself to three questions in the first round. We'll have two rounds of questions. So it will be possible to ask another three questions after the first round. That gives everybody the chance to ask their questions about the report of the Supervisory Board. Any questions? Go ahead. My name is Dan Alden. I'm talking on behalf of the VEB. I've got two questions for you, not three questions. First of all, we have seen that it wasn't a really great year for BAM, and in fact it hasn't been a very great decade for BAM. And that applies to the whole sector as a whole, because what is the real problem, given that sometimes you see the whole executive board has been replaced, but that doesn't seem to have changed much. So how can you, as supervisory board, supervise? Is everybody looking in the same direction? Is everybody making the same mistakes? Or is there something else underpinning the problems? And the fact that it's been going on for so long. Now, if a company can make such a big loss on one project, how can the supervisory board be supervising correctly? I mean, you're not just checking signatures, are you? Or possibly the supervisory board has the same background as the manager, so that they're all pretty much looking in the same direction, not seeing the problems coming. And the second question relating to that, is it time for another strategy? That's question one. And question two relates to the departure of the CFO. You have written in the report of the supervisory board that another strategic agenda requires another CFO. So what has changed in the strategy? That's the first part of that. Didn't it happen 2 years ago once the CFO was reappointed? And my last question, of course, could you tell us a little bit about Ms. Minton's departure? Well, thank you, says Mr. Noy. Any questions with respect to the report of the Supervisory Board? If not, well, then I will do my best to answer the questions that have just been put. First of all, he says it wasn't such a good year for BAM. Well, I think that's an understatement, really. I think it was a very disappointing year, actually. And he was asking whether or not all construction companies aren't making the same mistakes. Well, I can't talk too much about other building companies, but I can talk about BAM. And it seems to me that BAM, 2 years ago, introduced a new strategy which is really working now. And one of the important components of that is to improve risk management. To improve risk management, it's come to better and more predictable results. If you have a look at the results in 2017, you might say, well, that's all very well. It's all well and good, but you don't see it reflected in the figures. And that is, of course, true, as you will be aware. One project is really responsible for this, where things went seriously wrong. Does that mean that risk management as a whole is not in place? I think the answer to that is no, because over the last years, under the authority of the CEO and the executive board, I think we've got much better at risk management. Are we there where we want to be? Well, no, probably. But are we on the right road? I think the answer to that is yes, although you can't see that in the results of 2017. You might wonder, well, what are you doing in the supervisory board in terms of risk management? Well, I have to tell you that risk management is always high on the agenda in the entire supervisory board meetings and also in the audit committee. I'm quite sure Rob, our CEO, is going to say a bit more about that in a little while. But that we've got a whole revised review of tenders process. We've got a project database. We've got a huge slew of measures to improve risk management. Having said that, we haven't got there yet. But as I said, I think we're on the right road. We're on the right track. And we do have our full confidence that the wound that which we've been bleeding over the last years is going to be cured. Can we foresee everything? No, of course we can't. This is a sector where sometimes you are confronted with unforeseen circumstances which impact sometimes very negatively on financial results. But I have to say that our risk management processes are on the right track. Then you asked about strategy. The strategy that we introduced 2 years ago, well, that's a strategy which prevails right now. And as we have said, I'm quite sure that the CEO will talk about that at greater length in a minute. With respect to the departure of the CFO, you will have read the press communiques about that. We assess on a yearly basis how the executive board is functioning, and we came together to a conclusion that the introduction of the strategy really requires another type of CFO than the one we have now. Now, what does that mean, you ask? Well, another type of CFO, which is more hands-on and who is looking, drilling down more deeply into the impact of cost control within the organisation. Now, I have to say that Ms. Menson has done excellent work over the last years that she's been in BEM. But now that we're talking about dotting the I's and crossing the T's to implement our strategy, I think it is preferable, more expedient, let us say, that we get somebody else to do the job. That was our conclusion. Then you talked about the settlement of departure. Well, that was compliant with the contract. In other words, she gets a year salary, but no additional bonuses, just a year salary. You can see that in the annual report. So that's it. I hope I've covered the questions. Okay, second round, or? Please speak into the microphone, sir. Otherwise, we are unable to hear you. Geva, I'm an individual shareholder, had BEM shares for many years. I listened to what the VEB said. I mean, you've built a lot. Would you like to react to the position when you tendered for the Afsluitdag? Mr. Noy says, I would sooner go into that once we get to the presentation of the CEO, says the supervisory board, since you've addressed it to us, but I do think the CEO will go into that into greater depth. Well, of course, we said a lot about that, and the difference that you refer to, the financial difference, is not there. It depends on how you express things in financial terms. So the actual difference was 1%. We are happy that we lost that project. And I'm sure Mr. Vingarden will come back to that in a little while. Is there anybody else with respect to the supervisory report? Well, then I propose that you have taken note of that, and then we move on to the next point. That means the implementation of the remuneration policy in 2017. That was put as a separate item to be discussed in the AGM, and it is a legal requirement, as you will be aware, since the introduction of the clawback legislation on 1 January 2014. as an explanation of how it applies to the remuneration policy in 2017 as expressed in Section 2383C to and including 2383E of the Dutch Civil Code can be found on page 124 of the Integrated Report for the sake of completeness. As I said, you can have a look at that on page 124. But I have to say that the policy, the remuneration policy, has not changed over the last year. It was adjusted in 2017 before. Okay, so you now have the opportunity to talk to the application of the remuneration policy in 2017. Once again, use the microphone if you would be so kind. Say who you are and what you represent. Anything about the remuneration policy? Well, doesn't often happen that nobody wants to talk to the remuneration policy in an AGM. So, if there are no further questions, then I would suggest that the AGM has taken note of the remuneration policy of 2017, and let's move on to the next year. And that relates to the discussion of the report of the Executive Board over financial year 2017. I'm going to give the floor to Rob van Vingerden, our CEO and Chair of the Executive Board. Rob, over to you.
Ik loop even naar voren.
Now, moving to the front.
Presentatie te geven.
I'll have an easier time delivering my presentation. And I'd also like to thank you very much for showing up on this lovely day. I'm going to recap the previous year. I think we've known about it for a few months now, and at the very least, we could say this leads to mixed feelings, of course, in part because of the sea lock at IJmuiden, but I don't want this to cast a huge shadow on everything else going on in this company. So in this presentation, I'll try to strike a balance. Of course, we'll discuss the loss that we had to report, but at the same time, I'll tell you what did go well at BAM, and that's certainly worthwhile. These are the highlights from the press release known to you. You'll note the 1% margin as a consequence of that sea lock. Otherwise, it would have been 2%. And of course, you say, yes, but it is 1%, and you're right, but that's how we're presenting it. And as you see in the construction industry, we're experiencing the improvements on the Dutch market as well as the effects from the restructuring. And in Germany, our turnaround is well on track. In civil engineering in the Netherlands, we see the effect of the IJmuiden incident, but that's in part offset thanks to improved results in the UK, Ireland, and Germany. PPP continues to perform well, if only from the present portfolio. And we've been fortunate to add a project at the end of last year. The order book is a bit up from the previous year end, so we're certainly on track, not chasing revenue, but sustaining the margin. And our order book certainly does not give cause to do otherwise. We also took an impairment on the deferred tax assets. Those are deferred tax assets. This is due to underperformance in the Dutch fiscal entity. As for dividend, we're proposing 10 cents, which is slightly up from last year, with the option to receive shares, and that would offset the dilution through repurchasing shares. Now, as for the different sectors, let's start with properties. This is the Museum of Design, which is, of course, dedicated to design, including what's featured inside. And to make such a museum, you need to do a virtual digital model first. This project was wrapped up successfully with a nice margin. It's been completed and will open later this year. As for the results, at top left, you'll see that in the Netherlands, the UK, and the UK, revenue was a bit lower than the previous year, but if you look at the chart below, you'll note that the order book in the Netherlands is well filled thanks to our good market. The results revealed two important points. In the Netherlands, we're benefiting from the restructuring in the Netherlands as well as from the market recovery, especially in residential. There's a huge potential there in new construction in the years ahead, as well as renovations, and especially in that earthquake area, there are wonderful opportunities and much needs to be done there. As for offices in the Netherlands, that's picking up as well. That had a more extended gestation period, and shops are also growing again. There was a massive turnaround in Germany. As you know, before last year in Germany, we were a small company in a large country, and we've switched that. We decided to revise our focus. We'll focus on five major city areas and be an important player in a few small regions. I think the management did very well, and we've already achieved break-even, as we announced last year, and that is the result as well. As for working capital, that's at 12.3%. You know, the strategic agenda is to exceed 10%. So in this industry, we are exactly where we want to be. And we're doing everything to maintain that. Another point that needs to be mentioned from the previous year is what happened in May 2017, the partial collapse of that parking garage in Eindhoven. And, of course, that packs a punch and makes an indelible impression on everybody involved. Of course, there were no serious injuries and no casualties, so nothing terrible happened. I think we can all take comfort in that. But this was cause for an investigation into the cause. Two independent parties, TNL and the Bureau Hageman, have explored the accident and jointly conclude that applying the standard requires revision. Now, what happened in recent years? A type of floor was used where the first prefabricated plate needs to be properly attached to the concrete floor poured onto it afterwards. And the fact that prefab plate is made of self-adhesive concrete was overlooked in recent years, so that self-adhesive concrete doesn't adhere properly to the concrete subsequently poured on top of it. So that renders the floor far less strong than the calculations led us to believe. That's what led to the incident in Eindhoven. And that caused quite an uproar in the Netherlands where those floors were used. And I think that the reason it happened in Eindhoven was because the excess load was too much and the surfaces were thin because the architect wanted that type of structure. So this extreme application of those floors was big news, and there was a serious impact on the remaining buildings in the Netherlands with such floors. In BAM, we investigated the application of 30 buildings containing these floors and drafted. The guidelines have been drafted by the Ministry of the Interior, and this even penetrated discussions and the Board of Safety. And as a consequence of those new directives from the Ministry of the Interior, all these buildings were reassessed. 15 of our 30 buildings are fine. 10 are green. 10 are orange. We're awaiting new guidelines, but there's no reason not to use them or danger. We do need to assess them based on the new guidelines. 5 have been coded red. So they cannot sustain the load that we expected them to. So we haven't applied that load on them. There's no danger. The solution is relatively simple and is being applied occasionally and tested to come up with a still simpler solution. The costs are manageable. In all cases, we're on good terms and in touch with our principal in Eindhoven. The logistics situation is back to normal, so there are no safety zones that have been cordoned off anymore, and the logistics are back on track there. Of course, this also means that the building that was there has been demolished and a new design is in the pipeline. I believe that what's under construction will reflect a different structural approach. The financial consequences appear in our figures based on present insights. We mentioned high single digit. We can't be more accurate because negotiations are still in progress with the principal, and the legal settlement will take a while as well. But we have agreed with the customer that we're going to build the new parking garage. Next. This is a good example of the market. It's the Bijlmer prison in Amsterdam. That's a known structure, and this is the plan for the new building. We won that competition based on our knowledge and skill concerning circularity and sustainability. There will be 1,350 units at one of the prime sites in the Netherlands to be developed with partner Equity Life. I think that we've already arranged a lot of the procedures already. As for circularity, this means that over 90% of the material from the buildings presently there will be reused. It's energy neutral, so there's built-in wind turbines and solar panels, and the cell doors will be used to build bridges, and the bars will be the new concrete gates. That's why we're able to assess this price in the middle of the booming residential market, and that's why we're successful here. As for civil engineering, this exemplifies the most sustainable tunnel in the Netherlands, and it's entirely due to the way we accommodate the dust and material. And look at this tunnel system. It looks spick and span, but it's already been used, including for the sluice kill tunnel in Terneuzen, which was another very successful project. We're building this tunnel. This is the Rotterdamse Baan. That's the entrance at The Hague. There's also the Utrechtse Baan in The Hague, but this is the Rotterdam Baan heading to Binkhorst, where this tunnel is drilled at about 1.8 kilometers. Now, as for results, the revenue is comparable to the previous year. The order book is stable, especially in the UK. We see intake of several projects, and we see the impressive effect of the IJmuiden result in the Netherlands. Next one, please. Here's that lock in IJmuiden. And you see the situation not so very long ago. I'll try to explain generally what led us to report the result. We did. You see one land head, and there's another one there, and the door is over here. This is where the ships will pass through. You see one abutment and another, and there's a door here and a door there. These two doors are contained in concrete structure, and this is the level where they build the concrete structure, and after that it is arranged so that the ground slowly subsides. This is not rocket science. We often do this when we build such tunnels. What went wrong here? BAM, in this case, our joint venture party, with Volker Vessels as well, and the customer, and all kinds of experts from banks that need to issue approval for such a project, they overlooked the fact that when immersing these tunnels, there may be some torsion. so it never subsides evenly, but there's torsion. And we don't want to run the risk of that structure breaking when it's being immersed. So we thought, well, we'll build the walls thicker. And, of course, that peaked in November last year. It turned out to involve so much more armor that to secure it, you would need to use other equipment to suspend all of that. The walls weren't a bit thicker. They were being made a lot thicker. And you needed to do a lot more to reinforce it properly. The fact that there's no front end and upper end, which is normal for immersed tunnels, that's the problem. So that makes the structure less rigid, and in a standard immersion situation, it would not be an issue. During the review in the summer of 15, everybody looked at the innovative elements. That's why we were cheaper than the second ranking, not because there was something wrong with the caissons, but because we were filling and emptying the swirl through valves in the door rather than through deep circular channels that appeared in the other design. It's particularly frustrating for everybody, including you. It's unfortunate for all parties involved that this is the way it went down. Now, to answer your question about the Aufslautdike, what's the story there? There may be a huge difference there as well. I can explain, as Mr. Noy has mentioned, that the difference is less than 1%. What's the problem there? There's a contracting sum, and that the contract price is based on the design provided by a consortium, and you have the discretion to enhance that design. So the more you enhance it, the more costly that making that design becomes, but you can also invest in some deductibles. To give you an imaginary example, a hypothetical example, suppose there's no traffic nuisance during the construction of the Aufslautdike. I'll build a huge detour so that there's no nuisance to anybody. Of course, that building that road costs some money, but it gives you a lot of deductible credits. So we'll place a sign in our consortium 70 kilometers an hour, and that costs a lot less than building the entire road. So that means that the contracting amounts are different, and the points, the credits to deduct are very similar. So the competitor invested a lot in these deductible credits. We made a simpler, more thorough design structure. I hope that answers your question and gives you a different impression than you may have originally had. Now, what did we learn from IJmuiden? Because there was that tender procedure that Mr. Noy mentioned, where we handled those risks far more consciously. What made IJmuiden happen? In the beginning of the tender, we kept considering the contractual risks and whether or not to accept those risks and maximum liabilities, so penalties that we would no longer accept, and so on and so forth. Now, thanks in part to this incident, we will conduct a far more extensive design review during the tender. Up to what point will we accept changes? In what measure will we continue elaborating designs? How much will you invest in the tender? And those criteria will be far more firmly embedded, in part because of this. Because you see our priorities for 2018. We're now in that tender stage case. And the benefit is that we'll be a learning sector. Finally, we'll learn from mistakes. And one way is to position everything you've learned properly so that the next team on the next project can use that as a point of departure rather than needing to reinvent the wheel in a new project. And I think that's necessary to make a lasting change, and that's supported by digitization. That's our second priority in this agenda and this year, that we'll do a lot more prep before we make something. And I know that Imouden doesn't exactly prove this point, but we need to remain confident and we need to retain faith in what we're doing. And we're very clearly doing that. And we'll continue to standardize and to benefit from economies of scale that continues, and the business controls will also continue, not only through qualitative improvements, but also by making things far easier to compare.
Innovatie.
Moving on to innovation. Now, over and above improving the ongoing projects, we've got a good idea here. This is the 3D printed bicycle bridge that we're building. It's the first one in the Netherlands. So we're building with the Technical University of Eindhoven. So it's a printed bridge. Now, clearly, it's not a six-lane motorway. It's a modest project, but it still gives you a very clear idea of how we're moving in the sector in general, and BAM in particular. Because printing means you make less waste, less mistakes, it's safer, you don't have to work outside in wind and rain, and you can do it all in a protected environment. Now, moving on to PPP, this is a courthouse in a series of seven that we've been building. Well, what to say about that? It's a consistent and steady result if you look at PPP and the number of contracts that we have up and running. You can see in the middle here that the operational result is making a useful contribution over the last years. And in orange, these are transfers. These are sales of excellent projects to our joint venture partner. And what does that lead to? Well, you get a one-off result when you transfer. Moving on to the income statement here, you can see the 1%, that 1% unadjusted result before tax. Our result, as I said, was halved because of the Imouden debacle. It means that the result is far less than the 2% we'd hoped for. You see the net result before tax, EBIT. The thing is that we had some deferred tax, which had to be written off on the basis of our results from our Dutch fiscal entity. You know how that works, and it's all been reported in our consolidated annual report. Cash flow now, running from top to bottom, net cash. And the result, you can see the result of that, and investments. We've added on to that working capital, huge leap forward from minus 6 to minus 10%. That is stabilizing now. I think that's the explanation of that figure. You can see 80 million net investment property. There is quite a lot of being divested, including a stadium in North Holland. And that leads to a business cash flow of 13. Dividend, restructuring, pensions, all of those pretty stable, which have made a change in the cash position, minus 43 mil. If you look at a financial position, the net cash position has improved. And what is interesting here is that the capital ratio has improved to over 21%. You can also see ROCE, the return on average capital employed, which is 2.8. Well, we're moving towards 10. That's what we want. And if we hadn't had that problem with the lock, we would be somewhere near 7 there. Markets, where we're operating in now. This is the Museum of the Future in Dubai. This is an example. I mean, basically, you can't do this in any other fashion unless you do it digitally. You've got to simulate it. You've got to computerize it. I mean, it's the only way it works. There's a poem from the Crown Prince of the UAE. In other words, each part is very different. But we're running on time, and it's going to be a mega success, we hope. Looking elsewhere in different markets, where you can see our five home markets and the activities that we're conducting there. I've talked about the residential construction market here and property market. We really have to keep our beady eye on the supply chain because there's quite a lot of pressure there. We do see that the increases of recent times have stabilised, but there are shortages in this market. If we look at the civil engineering market in the Netherlands, that's pretty stable. The Afsluitdijk is going well, and small projects as well. We are intensively discussing the Dutch water ministry. We are talking with them. How can we best divide risks? What kind of risks have the government to assume? What kind of risks do contractors have to assume? But everybody has their own liability here, of course, where we can improve things by being open with the Ministry of Waterways to ensure that we get the best possible result there. In Belgium, I would say the markets are moving bit by bit in the right direction. Germany now? Well, there's a lot going on. I think there's going to be a lot to come in the years to come. Refurbishment of infrastructure. We won an important tender on the A10, A24. Well, the UK, well, what to say about that? Brexit. I don't know how you look at that, but we haven't really noticed much from Brexit as yet. We work with the public sector and 60-70% in the construction sector. And, of course, the Brexit supporters are probably going to keep domestic expenditure at a high level. But even in London, if you take London, we haven't suffered much of a decline. Now, it can happen, of course, but for us, Brexit so far is something, as I said, that we need to keep a close eye on, but it is so far, so good. Carillion, well, 40,000 staff, 20,000 in the UK, 5 projects. We've been able to take them over under good conditions. It means that people are, the market's freeing up. There are people coming onto the market. Now, it is a very sad story that happened with that company, but there have been no consequences for Bern. There'd be no joint ventures, so that's okay. Ireland, good market, good team, good performance from our OPCO over there. And finally, well, the rest of the world. Well, we are, of course, in niche products, scaffolding, et al, oil and gas market. That is moving as it moves. We feel the impact of that. And last year we said we're going to get involved in nearshore. People are also moving from nearshore onto the land, at Museum of the Future, and other projects, the marina in Abu Dhabi, where we are involved. Let's have a look at the order book now. Well, you can see there the increase there relates to a number of new projects. Gothenburg Tunnel, also in England. Children's Hospital in Ireland as well. So over and above the smaller projects, which all, taken in aggregate, increases the order book. We, though, are focusing on the margins these days. Outlook. Well, the outlook for the full year 2018. What we said at the beginning of the year holds true now. We do expect an adjusted result before tax of around 2%. says Mr. Noy, the chairman. Well, thank you very much, Rob, for that. And now I'm going to tell you how many votes can be cast here. But I'm not sure that I know. Oh, here we are. In this meeting, we've got 102 shareholders and 120 proxies. The number of votes that can be cast, 86,999,923. That is 31.84% of total subscribed share capital. So on the basis of the report from the Executive Board, you can ask some questions. Once again, please use the microphone to say who you are, whom you represent, and all that for the minutes, of course. We're going to do two rounds. The first round, please restrict your questions to three questions so that everybody has another go. And the second round, well, you can really go ahead.
Yeah, bedankt.
Yes, well, thank you very much. It's always good to be the first. Who are you, sir? My name is Henk Rinks. I thought you would know my name by now, but of course you have to write it down again. I'm representing myself here. I've been here every year since donkey's years. I'm always happy to put a few questions to you. What do we want to talk about? Well, the PPP. The PPP projects. I have the idea that given that there are less of these in the Netherlands and in Belgium, that less governments are interested in getting in PPP projects. I don't know whether the same applies for the UK. BAM was always very enthusiastic about that in the past. As a major contractor, really you're more suited to PPP to PPP projects than when you're small. So I thought it was always advantageous to BAM to snap up these PPP projects, and I had, as I said, that the trend is changing and that there are less PPP projects to tender for. What does BAM think about this? Is it a sad story, or does BAM think this, my perception of this is wrong, or is it just a short, small dip? So what does BAM think about PPP projects? And what does BAM think is going to happen in the future? That's clear, Mr. Rinks. Let's move on. Mr. Rinks moves on, and he's talking about... we're talking about property, ground, on which you can build for residential building, residential construction. So you can only build if you've got the ground on which to build. Now, of course, when residential construction collapsed 10 years ago, everybody was getting rid of their land bank. And people were losing a lot of money. And 10 years ago, I was saying, is this a good idea to get rid of the ground? Because, after all, you know, they're not making it anymore, are they, in the Netherlands? And I'm not really... everybody's just building in the Netherlands. The areas on which you can build will soon be totally built upon. So how does BAM think about the property or ground on which you can build is going to be a very important facet in the future? And how does BAM perceive this? That's clear too, says Mr. Noy. That's clear, Mr. Rinks. The last point for this round, I have the impression that now you're going to get back into building, that there's going to be a scarcity in subcontractors. You can have a problem with your supply chain. Building materials, that's shrunk. I know a owner of a timber, well, a timber merchant, and he's having, you know, less and less turnover over the years. And now I see that over the years, the dividend that we have been receiving has going down. But in the timber business, people are making more and more money. How do you perceive this? If you're going to want your building supplies to be delivered on time, you're going to have to pay more for them. So subcontractors, problem, scarcity along the whole line. And before, once upon a time, you could have 10 painters competing for a job, and now you're very lucky if you get one painter turning up. It sounds like you know what you're talking about, Mr. Rinks, says Mr. Noy, our chairman. Mr. Rinks does apparently know what he's talking about. He was at the Hyman's meeting last week and has listened clearly to the stories. Well, it's let's listen to what Bam thinks about this, questions that you've put. So that's very kind of you. I've got some more questions for the second round. Fair enough. Mr. Noy now says, anybody else with questions? Ilonka de Beer? I'm here on for VBDO, that's the Investors for Sustainable Development. We've got 600 members, and we go to meetings, AGMs all over the Netherlands to listen about sustainability. Now, I'm happy that you touched upon sustainability, Mr. Vingerden, the Bijlmer, etc., the circularity, the boogie-woogie tunnel, of course. Maybe you can tell us why you called it the Boogie Woogie Tunnel, and also the 3D printing. Now, in the consolidated report, we had a good look at that, your yearly report, and it seems to us that the sustainability vision is to have a net positive impact on the environment and society as a whole by 2050. But yet, 2050 seems to me quite a long way down the road. And maybe you're not going to be here, Mr. Van Vingerden, when that happens. So my question is, couldn't we advance the date a bit? Could we not possibly think about 2045 or 2040 or 2035, maybe you could achieve that? And Obama is certainly not all alone looking at sustainability. So how do you look at, for example, the Ministry of Waterways and things like that here in the Netherlands? What kind of partnerships could you set up in order to promote the sustainability vision? Secondly, natural capital. We saw something which we weren't happy about. Some things there. Problems, impact on coral reefs in Curaçao. Now, it was to be expected that some of that coral reef had to be removed, but apparently too much or a lot more has been damaged than was initially foreseen. What did you learn from that? What was your takeaway from that? How can you better approach this in the future, and how can other parties understand better in order to deal with natural capital in a more felicitous fashion? My last question is about the sustainable goals, which is set up by the UN, the Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs. Now, you've got a very nice distribution of those in your report, the 32 of them, which SDGs mesh with the BAM strategy. We see activities formulated for 2020, but we don't really see what kind of yardstick you're going to use to measure this. What kind of metrics are you going to use? So we'd like to see that in the net report next year. And we missed to SDG 17, which is about partnerships, because that relates I mean, that may be something where you can achieve results somewhat more swiftly than with the other SDGs. Love to hear your response to that. Anybody else? First of all, the gentleman in the corduroy jacket. Yeah, I just have to get to the microphone. Case Sampson, individual investor, thanks to the CEO. I like ambitious, but the to have a roadshow by 2020 of two figures, you know, over 10%, I think that is really ambitious. The 2%, of course, should be feasible. But the new strategy, that we have is vital to this, I guess. But how come you are so convinced that growth is in the pipeline? Another point, which has already been touched upon, but I want to come back to that. Now, the order book may be a large one, but if it's very difficult to get subcontractors and really good, experienced staff, I mean, I don't know quite whether you are planning the availability of subcontractors in your overall vision. How does BAM see that? If you've got clear agreements, because otherwise you're going to be penalized, aren't you, for any delays. You will be the guys paying for any delays because you are the main contractor. So will building the present, creating the future help there? Next question. Martins Eindhoven, private investor, individual investor. Well, we heard how things can go wrong in the Amouden lock. I would say let's forget it. The Dutch expression for let's forget it is let's throw sand on it, but of course you can see what they're talking about. Sand, no, surely it's water. Anyhow, let's forget it, says the investor. BAM building is the biggest dams in the world, or biggest locks in the world, excuse me, with newest technology. So let's look positively and let's not look negatively. I've had BAM shares forever. Sometimes there are disappointments, but I believe that we are on the cusp, our cusp of doing great things. And I think sometimes it would be very good for the shareholders' excursion this year to go to Amouden so we can have a good look at these lock gates. and so let's see if we can't at least also have for next year, a truncated, curtailed yearly report sent to us at home. It's very good, because then it's very good for shareholders to know what's going on. This large report that you have, of course, is a thing, a heavy object to send out to everybody, but I think you could sell a succinct report. Thank you, Mr. Martin, says the chairman behind you. To an elder from the VEB. First of all, given what's happened in 2017, has this given thought to the executive board to rethink strategy, or are you just going to restrict yourself to certain areas in the future and avoid others? And regarding the Amouden lock, can that be to a certain extent due to the reorganization, the extensive reorganization that's taken place in BAM over the last years, and maybe you've lost some expertise here. And you're using BIM models. Are the BIM models so outstanding as you would have us believe? Contracts with the C-lock. Surely there are penalty clauses for the AMAD and lock. Are we going to see penalties imposed upon BAM? And we've seen some pretty bad results in the past. Do you think robust is? Do you think BAM is robust enough to handle the future? Thank you, Mr. Nauder. Anybody else? Mr. Chairman, I'm Magnus Heidemann. I live in The Hague and I'm a private individual shareholder. Construction has always been reproached as a sector that they're really only working with medieval products. given that now you're using 3D printing, do you think that everything's changed? And do you think that you are working in a much more efficient fashion, given that you can now build huge prefab pieces in your own premises? Having said that, I'd like to come back to AMADA. Now, AMADA was a big project. Generally speaking, normally, don't you come up with a model, a little model, a small model, which you can then run tests on? Had you done that? So a small-scale model is what the gentleman's talking about. If you'd had a small-scale model and you run the tests on that, you surely would have been able to spot any defects and been able to ascertain that the loss incurred might have been attributable to the other partner in this project, and then you would have lost less money. Thank you, Mr. Enman. I'm looking around. It's number... Yes, another person. Another person from the room. My name is Finkels. I wanted to talk to AMADA. If I recall things correctly, you took this project together with Volker Wessel Stavin. I haven't heard any profit warning from them. They took a provision already in their 6 monthly figures. They took a provision, Volker Wessels, and you are coming with a profit warning at a different stage. So could you explain? Do you think you informed the market in correct and proper fashion here? Thank you, Mr. Sfinkels. A chair. My name is Terfelder. I'm an individual shareholder. I got 3 questions for you. First of one is about risk distribution. Now, you are a construction company. You say that you can mitigate risks. In your presentation, you say you're discussing with the Ministry of Waterways. Because it does seem to be that, the ministries really know quite a lot more sometimes than individual companies, and sometimes they try to shift the responsibility to the construction companies. Do you think discussions with the Rijkswaterstaat, for example, are going to label risk to be better dealt with and shared? Now, with regards to PPP, it seems to me that the government and the individual municipalities can borrow money much more cheaply than can a construction company. Now, I have heard about PPGM. I didn't really know quite what that means. But I concede that the government can borrow money for just about nothing in the short term. So why do they let private companies finance? And now, what about the risk of the of pounds sterling? Have you hedged that? So that is there an exchange rate risk, and have you managed to cover it, hedge it?
Voordat we nu overgaan.
I propose that we proceed to answer the questions following Mr. De Velde's question, and I'll hand you over to Rob to start. Let's start with the bridge. No, the bridge has not been hedged. The only risk would be the exchange rate. That means, as you say, the costs and income are all in the UK. That means that we only have that currency exposure. And we have opted not to hedge that further. As for borrowing PPP, the concept in public-private partnerships is that you have overall responsibility, including funding. And because of that, the consortiums seek out the offer that is best overall. And this relieves the government from the burden of financing or releasing funds, because everything happens on the market to achieve optimal results. The public-private partnership strength is that it involves the entire product life cycle. If you want to ensure sustainability, you need to consider the total life cycle, including true value, in the single package. So it may sound suboptimal, and it may sound like penny-pinching, but in the total framework where consortiums merge the whole package, you come up with an optimal formula. Now, risk distribution between the principal and the contractor. I mentioned that close consultations are addressing specifically this topic. It sounds like the government is very clever, but the A15 that we fortunately were not involved was also a loss of $300 million with other parties, and the Department of Public Works doesn't appreciate that either, because we benefit from construction projects that showcase the Dutch skill and knowledge, and these negative outcomes do not benefit anybody, not even the Department of Public Works. Sufficient power to achieve the shift in the risk distribution, it used to be far less, especially in the recession when this riskier construction method is marketed. It's turned out to be a poison project. Wanting more work and taking on riskier projects led to accidents that we hope will never recur. So we've got good talks going, and the Department of Public Works is more aware than any other that it's a trade-off. So we're in a position to highlight those risks and perhaps set up a joint fund, and we're heading slowly in the right direction. Now, I'll say a bit about Volker Wessel's profit warning. All I can say, because we do tangent projects, we've got exactly the same project vision, and we focus very carefully on reporting our results by the book, according to the Authority for Financial Competition. Everything else, I'm convinced that we operated entirely by the book, and Volker Wessel would not have achieved a much better result based on what they knew and we didn't. We were evenly matched. So the imp- suppression that might have materialized is not factual, because I don't want to hog the floor. I'd love to give my esteemed colleague Eric something to say. Let's start with that question from Mr. Rings. You had a question about public-private partnership. Is demand diminishing in the Netherlands for these types of projects? We're still working on large public-private partnership projects, and it's on the rise in other countries, such as Germany. They've got many large PPP projects in the pipeline, including renovating motorways. We took on two large PPP projects, and we've got quite a few in the next decade. And in Ireland, where they're trying to build social housing, there's a huge demand for new houses since the recession, but there are insufficient there's finances for the pre-funding. So in the Netherlands, it may stabilize, but there's a huge demand from other countries. Remark off mic, interpreter apologizes.
Nee, wij geven de voorkeur eraan in ieder geval dat.
We certainly prefer to be involved in the design. So the PPP arrangement is where we design, build, maintain, and finance. And financing may not be so important, but we do want to design, build, and maintain, because that instrumentalizes our knowledge. That enables us to use our strength and not to compete on price. Another remark off mic, then we can use that knowledge that the other parties don't have, and that is what we do best.
Dan hebt u nog een vraag gesteld.
You asked an additional question about land positions. We still have a lot of land positions. There's over 500 million in property in our country. What we are seeing in the Netherlands is that the developments are happening in the inner cities. So while most land developers are focusing on the periphery, the government is trying to build inside the city. So it's difficult to obtain these land positions. As for the way the market is developing in other land positions, well, we don't have a crystal ball of everything that we're very satisfied with everything that we sold, because we were convinced that this was area that would not be built up for quite a while. Remark off mic, interpreter apologizes. I don't think we can know everything there is to know. Remark off mic, interpreter apologizes. You also asked an additional question about construction materials. Let's give Mr. Box a chance to answer those questions. Of course, we envisage that risk. There's a market shortage. Will we get the material on time? Prices are rising. We've been anticipating that for over a year. Because of indexation and agreements with subcontractors, we can transfer that risk. But we've also noticed that the budgets of the contractors are sometimes insufficient, so some projects are canceled for lack of budget allocation, or the scheduling is overly optimistic. We're not going to get into that. We're very candid with the principals. We accept the commission only if we expect to get the material in time and are able to reach good agreements with subcontractors and hedge the price increases. So sometimes we turn down projects. Yes, it's certainly happening. It's on the top of our mind. We work on that every day. We prefer margin. That's our priority. And if we have to waive a project because it doesn't fit our plan, then we do that. Remark off mic, interpreter apologizes. The risks have changed. First, the risk was not having enough work. Now the risk is, can we do that project on time and on budget? Now, as for the VBDO's question about sustainability, that's an important topic on our strategic agenda. We see that not only as a responsibility, in society, we also see it as a business case because our customers in society also appreciate sustainable products, and we can provide that. And the projects that you highlighted from the presentation are modest examples of this. Our target for 2015 is net positive. That's my text that I also use, but the Governing Council report mentions similar ambitions, and I'm also on the task force with Bernard Vinches to make that happen with the climate tables, and I always ask, what will we be doing tomorrow? That's a very good question. On the one hand, you need long-term objectives, but there are also short-term actions. I mentioned repeatedly that this is just the beginning. We're starting to do things less badly, such as curtailing carbon dioxide and reducing waste. These are quantifiable targets. At the same time, we're trying to develop projects that will be conducive toward achieving our climate goals. So we have the ideas to make homes energy neutral within 10 days without forcing the resident outside. And we've got new construction to do things far more efficiently based on choices made on iPads so that waste will be reduced and errors will be reduced as well. And we're on the right track, but it won't happen overnight. So modesty becomes us. At the same time, you need to be ambitious in terms of the long-term objectives. Now, as for Curaçao, of course, that was a very disconcerting news item. From the outset, we negotiated with the client. It sounded like there was a natural calamity. Of course, there were damages affecting 440 square meters. That's 20 by 20 meters. So, but since it was very elongated, that was 200 times 2 because there was a pipeline across the land. And the agreement with the client is that on the other side of the island, a nature reserve will be secured. And because of the use by the ships in that very same area, there will be some encroachment on the coral reef as well. So the question is how to handle these projects. We always consider this when we think that the client and the surroundings need to be protected, such as a nature reserve, then we adopt a position based on our modest opinion. But the depiction of the damages do not match reality, in my view. Of course, these considerations always figure in our state the case process. It's not black and white, and there's no rigid script. You have to take each case individually, and we even discuss this on the supervisory board. It's certainly on the agenda, both personally and as a company and socially. We want to do our bit to make our surroundings sustainable. Now, as for the sustainability goals and whether they might be more quantifiable and easier to measure next year, we're working on carbon dioxide and waste. We're tracking them carefully. That leads to all kinds of logistic optimizations as well as evaluations of how are we working, can't we do better? So it may distract us from carbon dioxide, but there's a lot of spin-off to improve the structure of our actions and our companies, and we'll try to improve our reporting on that next year. We did receive the Crystal Award for our annual report's transparency and relevance in depicting all value-adding matters and also explaining how we're on track in things that need to be improved, and apparently that's been noticed. As for sustainability goal 17 on partnerships, we're working with ENCOR internationally to see what we can do in a broader context to help. We still have quite a ways to go. in an industry where a lot of the parties are pivotal in society, so you have to get everybody on board to get anywhere. And I hope that it's visible that we're really getting somewhere. Now, let's see. Mr. Sampson, that question was about the return on capital employed. It's only 2.8. The ambition is good. We clearly are ambitious, and I think that the strategy is focused almost entirely on achieving that 10% within the strategic period. And basically, the question is, how can we achieve more with less? That's not only financial. That's also about our planet. How can we do more with less material? You also see that about people. How can we develop our people better and equip them with better knowledge to make the most out of the input? We're trying to get more from capital and get more from return on capital employed. We believe that the current strategy has that potential and that the targets are certainly feasible. And I hope that when the time comes, I'll be able to report that. Now, another question where Eric took the run-up about skilled staff and our contractors. How much do we know? We performed an entire spend analysis throughout the company recently. So for each project and each supplier, we examined who is doing which projects, where we see price trends. We're monitoring that closely. Previously, the seller would go to the customer, but the time has changed. We discuss indexation arrangements with our customers, and we talk about cost plus arrangements. So we're on top of it, but it's certainly a concern. And if this involved demand only, then there would be a lot of pressure, and that would spoil the mood. So sometimes this causes a bit of delay, and there may be budget problems for clients that have to adjust to the extremely rapid recovery of this market. As for the Lacanay Mauda, let's put that behind us. I think that's a very important message. Of course, it's tragic what happened, and it's really a shame if you look at what the people achieved there. And I'm not even talking about myself. I'm talking about on-site over there. It's unbelievable, and it's a shame that it was depicted in such a negative light in the media. So I agree entirely with you that debate needs to continue. And we will propose we'll take your proposal to organize an excursion to a Mauden seriously. And we don't want to repeat that experience of the Lacanay Mauden, of course. As for the big, thick book, we'll take your proposal on board about circulating a brief report by snail mail. I'm sorry you called it a big, thick book, because we did get the Crystal Award once again. As for strategy, do we want to build everything? No, we certainly don't want to build everything. Mr. Den Oude of the VEB, that was a good question. The second pillar of our strategy, you know, the first one is to do things better, and the second column is to do better things. And based on the information made available to us, where do we deserve to make those choices? Can we repair something? Can we make a profit there? If not, we'll stop doing it. I could give you some examples of a few customers or products that we divested because we didn't think it would be profitable anymore. So it's a justified question. We're on top of it. It's certainly not a consequence of the restructuring, because we cherish our expertise and we want to keep our engineers in the company happy. And I think that we should be proud that the company remains attractive to good new people. And are these new types of BIM models sacrosanct? No, nothing is sacrosanct. This is our third strategy column. We're still simulating and visualizing, but we're going to integrate it far more. So I think we need to stay on track and to remain confident of the course that we selected. And I think that will help mitigate the occasional bleeders that we encounter. As for the penalties that are contained in contracts in the provisions now, of course, we're working hard to prepare for a possible next cycle or recession so that we remain robust. We're just emerging from a deep recession. We have a lot of internal potential that we are unleashing. And, of course, there will be a new recession at some point. So we want the performance of the company to be predictable with the reinforced buffers. That's at the top of our list. Now, the question from Mr. Heidemann. There was a reproach that the industry is obsolete. Of course, I've heard that. But we need to be aware that that's going to change soon. The tremendous fragmentation remains unfortunate, and the output column is divided among many different partners, and sometimes change doesn't always serve the interests of operators in that chain because a lot of parties subsist from interface management and many consultants benefit that. So there's some resistance to optimizing the chain, but it's going to happen. And if you don't really have something to add in the chain other than converging supply and demand or working on consumer databases, then you won't last. And we're approaching a situation where production is in a climatized zone, and the most easily transportable parts will be taken to the construction site and assembled with pluck and play with minimal nuisance to cities. As for the models, there was a huge study in Delft at a scale of 1 to 40, and that model of the sluice involved testing everything except for the immersion of that casing. So filling the swirl and the water entering, yeah, it was just the immersion of something that we didn't expect to cause problems. They overlooked testing that. As for who's to blame, we're negotiating with the Department of Public Works, and that the talks are constructive, and we aim to complete that lock. Just as everything we start, we'll wrap it up and reach a reasonable, fair pricing arrangement. I think that covers quite a few of the questions. Thank you, Rob, for this extremely detailed explanation with answers to questions from the first round. As promised, I'll give you the opportunity, if you have any cause, to ask questions in the second round. Yes, two candidates for the second round? Okay. You'll have the opportunity first. I'm still Kay Samsom, a private investor. Mr. von Wingerden answered the question asked by Mr. Terfelde that you decided not to hedge the exchange rate risk between the pound and the euro, full stop. And I'm very curious about why. Well, one of the reasons is because the costs and revenue are all in the UK, so it's only about the earnings there. That's why we decided to do it that way. So there isn't really an exchange rate risk because there's a natural hedge. It's just the translation risk. If you have to convert the UK earnings into Dutch euros, then it can be either in the red or in the back black, and hardly any company can hedge that. Yes, I understand. Thank you. Now, Mr. Rings, the first and the last. Yes, I'm still Mr. Rings, and I'd like to touch on one more thing, that's outsourcing. I think that's been happening for a long time in the construction industry and is main contractor, you have fewer and fewer of your own people in projects, that they're pivotal in supervision and drafting cost estimates and crunching numbers, but not once it's in progress. So increasingly, self-employed people are working in construction, as well as subcontractors and subcontractors who bring their people from Romania, which is probably explains all the rise in construction site accidents. It had been a trend of fewer and fewer casualties for a while. Heimans reported the first casualty for the first time in several years last year. Could you please get to your question? Isn't it time to reverse that trend and use more of our own people, because it's easier to select your own staff than if you're dependent on subcontractors and sub-subcontractors? My sense is that we need to reverse that in the construction industry. I understand your question. Was that it? Okay, perhaps Mr. Bucks can take that one. Well, it's been a trend to deal with subcontractors that way, and you have to, because you keep needing different types of people for different projects, so you can't have everybody on your payroll. That wouldn't work. Well, the people from those subcontractors need to be need the same training as our own people, so we provide safety training to subcontractors as well. We deal with many people from different countries who speak different languages, but whether they're on the payroll at the subcontractor or with us shouldn't make a difference. There's a lack of skilled people in the Netherlands. We simply have to deal with those aspects, manage it, and consider it carefully. Okay, one very important point was made. Can we wrap up the discussion of the report by the Board of Management on this note and take this as duly noted and move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the discussion and adoption of the financial statements for 2017. You'll find the financial statements on pages 143 and following, 146 and following in the annual report. It's been discussed with the supervisory board, who agreed to it. I'd also like to refer to page 114 of the integrated report, where the supervisory believes that the financial statements for 2017 and the report of the executive board and the report of the supervisory board are a good foundation for the accounting by the executive management for the management and by the supervisory board for the supervision of such management. These auditors' opinion appears on page 241 of the integrated report. And before we move on to discussing the financial statement, I'd like to hand you over to Mr. Kerst, who is the responsible partner at EY for auditing BAM's financial statements, and he'll describe his audit. Mr. Kerst. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. I'm Wim Kerst. I'm the auditor at EY. And I'm responsible for auditing the integrated report for 2017. I'm going to speak briefly about the audit, and after that I'll be happy to take questions. If you have any questions about the content of the financial statements and internal control, the supervisory board will be happy to take those questions. You know a lot about our audit already, because you'll have read our statement on page 241. That's where it starts. And you'll immediately read our comprehensive conclusion. It's a statement of approval, and I'm pleased to elaborate on a few aspects of our statement. On that page 241, you see how we were involved in our conclusion and that we audited the annual financial statements, which accurately reflect assets, results, cash flows. We have also identified some important sustainability indicators and audited them, including the number of serious accidents. That's an important performance indicator for BAM, and we've established that that's adequate and reliable information. Okay. We also covered the thick version of the entire annual report in front of you. We read it, we evaluated it, and we determined that everything that BAM needs to report is reported, and that it seems reasonable to us, and that we don't see any material discrepancies there. Those are the ultimate external evaluations of the information shared with you. I'm sure you understand that that was subject to an extensive audit for a large company such as BAM. We audited all 10 OPCOs from We had a central team instructing auditors in the Netherlands and abroad for the different divisions. And we received the findings. We evaluated them. We challenged them. And with 8 of the 10 OPCOs, we were physically present at the wrap-up discussions to hear the information straight from the horse's mouth. In BAM International, we also visited the projects and the auditors in Tanzania and Dubai, and we did the audit independently too. Throughout BAM, we examined about 100 projects in meticulous detail if the risk profile was elevated, and we discussed them. We have quite a large team working on this. The auditors have experience in construction, development, and PPP. It's basically a small fleet of specialists for IFRS, forensic services, valuating development positions, IT, taxes. And then on page 244 and 245, you'll see the highlights of our audit. These are the key audit matters. There are 5, and I'm sure you realize that in an audit year, we cover a lot more matters with the executive and supervisory boards. But if you ask what are the most important topics for the audit in 2017, it's these 5. And you may know this, but a highlight does not automatically mean a problem. In all companies, you need to assess the work on hand. That's core to the audit, and that's the case with BAM too. We devote a lot of time to that. That's what matters. And we also identified new key audit matters with respect to 2016, activating the gravity-based foundations. In 2017, 12 million was activated in gravity-based foundations. And IFRS allows that subject to rigid requirements, and we determined that BAM met those rigid requirements. As for a complete comprehensive registration of safety incidents, that was the important safety indicator. How do you know that all safety incidents are adequately, accurately, and completely reported? BAM has some safeguards to ensure that, and we checked that and found that it passed muster. Now, to wrap up a bit more about general communication and tone at the top, at least once a quarter, we have an official meeting with the executive and supervisory boards, usually near the AC meeting, the audit committee meeting, and we also have many informal contacts with finance, tax, IT, operational audit, compliance, governance, and risk management. And all I can say is these are very candid, constructive conversations. We critique everything and have the impression that our questions and findings are taken seriously and taken on board. A major factor influencing our audit this year was the AFM report about the work by auditors. As you know, in June 2017, the AFM released a report disclosing quite a bit about the audit of construction firms. AFM is our regulator, and their opinion of our work truly matters to us. That's obvious. We endeavored in our audit in 2017 to consider and apply the views of the AFM. Ladies and gentlemen, those were a few highlights. As far as I'm concerned, you have received a very reliable and insightful report from BAM, and I'll be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, Mr. Kers, for this explanation.
And I would now like to give everybody here the opportunity to put questions either about the financial statements or to talk, put questions to the auditor, should you wish. But please do that via me, says the chairman. Who would like the floor? Mr. Nauder. I have a question both about the financial statement and then for the auditor. What should I do first? Financial statement. Now, one of the objective was to reduce land holdings to under 500 million. And you see, to the contrary, in 2017, they increased by 28 million. And acquisitions, obligations and liabilities for that have increased it by 100 million. How does that work in your policy? So, how are you going to handle the land positions if the economy starts to drop? What are the lessons that BAM has learnt in land holdings? Second, the development costs have been capitalised. Can we assume that has been done in order to massage profits? It may well have complied to the letter of the law, let's say, but is this not directed towards achieving profit? Because if that's true, the third question is self-evident. Are you not looking at things and making assumptions? I'm looking through rose-tinted glasses. Well, thank you, says the chair, for those questions. Anybody else? Svinkles? Yes, I have a supplementary question for the auditor. You have been involved supervision of projects. But there was, of course, a joint project with Volker Wessels, wasn't there? And Volker Wessels, for that particular project, made a total loss of 120 million euros. That's what they booked. Oh, excuse me, for the whole project, 120 million, Volker Wessels and BAM. You have been involved with project and risk management supervision. Were there any signals? Was it flagged that the AMAD and LOC foundered, if you will, because of lack of communication? Because after all, 120 million loss, Focus, Vessels and Stafin listed that in their half-yearly figures about the loss in that project. But in fact, substantially, BAM did not react to what they published, but came out with a much later profit warning. Did you, as an auditor, were you aware of what was going on? Were you aware of the operational loss? Is that not part of your mandate as a supervisor? Thank you, says the chairman, Mr. Noy. Yet another question from the floor. Mr. Samson comes back to the fray. And it's getting tangled up in the microphone. Yes, but it still works. I'm still Case Samson. I'm still an individual investor. I had a look, a quick look at the current ratio and the quick ratio. The current ratio is the liquidity, indicates a period, of course, but that's 1.02, just above 1. So if you assume that you move forward with the short-term liabilities, current liabilities, and have less, I mean, basically gives you a very limited margin, and the quick ratio is 0.8, doesn't give you much room for maneuver. And what's your idea about improving these ratios? Okay, I agree it's a snapshot, but what is your strategy to improve these ratios? Well, that was Mr. Samson. Well, that seems to bring us to the end of the questions on the financial statement. Mr. Den Ouders' question. Land holdings. Yes, it's quite true. Our objective was to bring that to... Yes, it's fine. You don't need to hit it, sir. The strategic aim was to bring our land positions back to less than 500 million. That's what we thought. We've been trying to do that. We saw drops in land holdings, and yet we have seen now good developments in the market. We're not doing strategic land purchases where sometimes they were plans that took 20 to 25 years to come to fruition. In other words, sometimes we do equity light these days, where we get in, but we've already got an exit. We buy a position where we know when we're going to exit because we've already got a purchaser or we've done pre-sales on the residential area. And it may be that our land positions in the balance sheet may appear a bit lumpy, as we say. It goes up and down. But the policy is there. And we're busy, and we're making money, and making money out of the opportunities in the market. GBF developments, I don't think we should be looking there. We have developed products which can offer really good solutions in wind energy. And if there are environmental specification and requirements where you can't drill so much, because essentially this is a huge chunk of foundation with a lot of sand in it, with a propeller on the top. These are the biggest turbines that you have. These are, of course, the gravity-based wind farm foundations that I'm talking to now. Of course, we're going to be looking at that over years to come. I certainly believe that we are moving forward there. And there are real possibilities there, which I think we're going to try to exploit and develop over the years to come. Back to Amounden. You said Aselmounden, but I think Amounden is what you mean. Volker Vessels has exactly the same vision on the project as we did. We have taken 138 million loss between us, pretty much. That's the situation. In first and second quarter, we said that there were development issues, but we don't really want to call it a project because that actually disrupts the commercial relationship with a client. We certainly don't talk about possible losses, although we had to do that by November. And our stakeholders are fully aware of what the story was. So we are, together with Volker Vessels, on exactly the same line. Says the chairman, Mr. Noy. Just let me add something here that I think both parties in the joint venture both came out the same day in the joint press communique. The thing was that BAM came up with a profit warning they didn't, the other focus vessels didn't do that because obviously they had a bit more room for maneuver. But it had a different financial impact on folks vessels as it did on us, although the loss, the financial impact was identical. And then you had a question for the auditor, was there some kind of failure in risk management and... were the flags to sea? Yes, says the auditor. I can say and confirm what the CEO said, that there was a simultaneous announcement of loss. Tens of people, were dozens of people, as we say in English, were busy with this whole project. What Folger Wessels does with their information is not our remit, but it was only clear during the month of November, in conjunction with a report which BAM issued, did it become known to us, the problems with this project? My question from Mr. Swinkles again from the audience. We had the announcement of a profit warning in November. Now, you as auditor, sir, and this is a question from the audience here, you were talking about project management. You were looking at that in your role as an auditor. Did you not have any concerns about the feasibility of the project? Up until October, you saw no signs, no premonitory signs that there was a fly in the ointment? Because after all, we get it at the end of the day, it was a joint loss of 130 million euros. Surely, as an auditor, it was your remit to keep an eye on this. How can an auditor miss something like that? Mr. Noy says, the auditor will reply, Mr. Swingles, then I'll add something. The auditor says, listen, we are not technicians. We're not engineers. I think the CEO explained things extremely well. It was only in the course of October and November that the impact of all the technical estimates that turned out differently than expected led us to become aware of what was going on. Now, you can be extremely up to speed in estimates, but if you don't know the engineering side of it, as we don't, it would be impossible for us to ascertain it beforehand. There are other thresholds and limits to what auditors can do. Before you react, Mr. Swinkles brooks no objection here and says, what about the profit warning? The auditor knew, says the chairman, Mr. Noy. When the loss was obvious, the CEO told the supervisory board and the auditor. And I can tell you that our reaction was not a great deal different from your reaction, Mr. Swinkles. Laughter in the room at this remark. This project was on everybody's radar screen. You will know that in the first three quarters, there's already a loss of 14 million. So this project was on our screens, both in the audit committee, supervisory board as a whole. And you can imagine that everybody was extremely upset about this, starting with the CEO and the chair of the supervisory board as well. Now, there are a whole raft of issues that contributed to this. And you might say, well, it may, the point that you're making is, how can it be after one quarter has closed that suddenly such a big loss surfaces? That's your... But the thing was that this project was 25% complete, and the team thought they were going to be able to sort things out, but things didn't go smoothly. We had a new project manager, and then the loss surfaced as a solid loss. Now, what lessons have been learned? I think much has been said about that, Mr. Swinkles. This is falls within the category of it happens once, but it's never going to happen again. All right, then, a technical question. Where we miss our CFO about the current ratio and the quick ratio. Rob, can you handle this one? Listen, we meet all the covenants, says the CEO, so we're very keen to maintain that position. So we keep a beady eye on parameters, but maybe Yost or Taco, can you argue? That was the question. What is our policy to improve these? This is corporate group auditor and his controller, and he's going to say something. My name's Taco Muntinka. The question about the current and quit ratios. These are ratios that are very much commonly in use. They're about debtors and creditors. Now, of course, we have a lot of work underway. We are often pre-financed in our products, which also, of course, has a negative effect on the ratios. And there is a substantial component of land in there. And now, we tell you that we're reducing our land holdings, but actually, these bring the ratios down. But that's not rare for construction companies. And we do have a very good cash position countering that. So for us, we feel the development of the ratios is not a cause for concern. You had another question for the accountant, sir, didn't you? Yes. Yeah, I've got a real trivial question, I think, for Mr. Kerst. Yeah, the auditor charged $2 million more than last year. What have you done? How can you justify that? Or have you come across things that thought, well, it's going to cost more money to sort that one out? And my second question, an auditor is extensively busy across the board. I would like to know, I mean, you say that there are some discrepancies or some disagreements between controllers and auditors. And how many disagreements are there? Are there 5 or 20 or 25? And then, and how much were you talking about? Was it $1 million here, $1 million here? What kind of figures were involved? Because you've been talking about audits and controls, but we'd really like to know the nuts and bolts. And Mr. Kerst is given the green light to respond. Okay, let me talk about the disputes or disagreements about audit areas, where you can see what threshold that we use to determine that. So everything over 1.6 mil is reported to the executive board and the supervisory board. So I can say there are no outstanding disagreements that remained over this 1.65 mil that I just mentioned. Now, of course, in the whole auditing process, you've got evaluations of land, of projects underway. But if the company agrees and books the difference, puts the difference on their books, then we're happy with that. Audit fee, well, there's extensive explanation of that in the report. Why? Well, there's the implementation of IFRS 15, which is a much more intrusively comprehensive standard, which came into force as of 1 January 2018, the company made extensive preparations, excuse me for that, last year. And it relates to thousands of projects. So for the first two quarters of this year, have required an inordinate amount of work from us and the company. So this is drives our audit costs up. Thank you, Mr. Kirst. Maybe Mr. Bone, chair of the audit committee, would like to say a few words because it was on the agenda of the audit committee. Thank you, says Mr. Bone. The auditing divergences were discovered during the audit. They were resolved. And what remains are a few items which are extremely minor, generously balance sheet classifications, really. So there are items which have no material effect on the profit and loss. Thank you, José Bone. Anybody else on the financial records or accounts? So I would suggest that we move on to the voting on adoption of the balance sheet, the adoption of the financial statements, and the explanation. So, well, okay. Everybody's going to get a voting box here, an electronic voting box. Now, we're going to be voting electronically, and our notary public, Mr. Schoenbrot, who works in Zuidbroek, he's going to help us. Now, all of this relates to people who have electronic voting box here in the Netherlands, here in Bunnik, and these will not apply to you who are watching this on the webcast. So, we will just cut the interpretation here until the instructions have been given on the electronic voting systems and everything. We will, of course, keep you up to date on the results of the votes.
Stemkastje heeft. Omdat we elektronisch gaan stemmen, even een proefstemming. En nog even kort de procedure. De smartcard met de goudkleurige chip steekt u in het kastje naar u toe. Als het agendapunt in stemming komt, dan heeft u 3 keuzemogelijkheden. Als u voorstemt, drukt u op de 1. Als u, u kunt uw stem nog wijzigen, dat ziet u hier. Dan kunt u een andere selectie maken. De laatste keuze geldt. En bij een 2 stemt u tegen en bij een 3 is het een onthouding. Na afloop kunt u de kastjes weer inleveren. Dit is een vrij bekende voorstel, geloof ik. We gaan proefstemmen over het volgende voorstel. Voorgesteld wordt.
Please bear with us. This is just voting instructions here in the Netherlands for people at the AGM. We will, of course, help you understand the voting results when they come through on the individual items.
Dan sluiten we hierbij de stemming, de proefstemming. En u ziet het resultaat wordt getoond. Dit was de proefstemming. Laten we nu overgaan tot de stemming waarbij we stemmen over het voorstel de jaarrekening vast te stellen. Ik open hierbij de stemming.
Now voting on the adoption of the 2017 financial statements. This is voting item 4 and the vote is now closed here and we will give you the results.
En het uitslag wordt getoond.
And the result will be delivered by the chairman. Thank you, Mr. Notary. The result of the vote is that the financial statements for 2017 had been adopted by your meeting as proposed. Next, agenda item 5, the adoption of the dividend for the 2017 financial year. As known, in 2017, the firm achieved 12.5 million euros net earnings, including a special impairment equaling 40 million euros concerning deferred tax liabilities, because this is a non-recurring, non-operational, non-cash event. BAM has not included this in calculating the dividend. Koninklijke BAM aims for a predictable dividend based on solid results in line with the financial objectives and considering the financial state of the firm. The pursued dividend distribution is between 30 and 50% of net earnings. BAM is proposing paying a dividend of 10 eurocents per share in cash or in shares. This would be a payout ratio rounded off to 50% of the net profits, excluding the special impairment. Based on this dividend proposal, assessed based on the number of shares issued for 2017, a maximum of 27.3 million will be distributed to holders of common stock. You may choose for payment in cash or in shares. If you do not opt for shares this year, that's different from other years, you will receive the dividend in cash. Please note that the firm will accommodate the dilution occurring as a consequence of issuing shares due to paying the dividend for 2017. They'll compensate this by repurchasing the same number of shares. Does anybody have any questions about the dividend proposal? If there are no questions, I propose that we open the vote on the proposal to adopt the dividend on ordinary shares for the 2017 financial year at 10 eurocents in cash or shares. And this proposal includes the instruction from the executive board, as included in the explanatory notes, for a period of 6 months to implement the dividend proposal. We're going to vote on adopting the dividend now. Please cast your vote.
Dan sluit ik bij D.
The vote is closed.
En de uitslag wordt getoond. Geef het woord aan de voorzitter.
The result is displayed. Back to the chairman. Thank you. I am adopting the result of the vote and determine that the dividend per ordinary share has been adopted at 10 eurocents in cash or scrip according to the general meeting, which, rounded off, was carried by 100% of votes cast in favor. And the dividends will, the shares will go ex-dividend, and as of 16 May 2018, the dividend will become payable. That takes us to agenda item 6, which is granting discharge. We have two stages for that. First, granting discharge to the members of the executive board for their management in the 2017 financial year. The general meeting is requested to grant discharge for the management in the financial year 2017 to the members of the executive board. In addition, this discharge concerns the duties performed as apparent from the annual financial report, the financial statements announcement during the general meeting, or other public disclosures prior to the adoption of the 2017 financial statements. Would anybody like the floor on this topic? If not, I propose that we open the vote, and I will hand you over to the notary. Now we're going to vote about granting discharge to the members of the executive board. Please cast your vote.
Dan sluit ik bij deze de stemming.
It is closed. The result has been displayed over to the chairman. Thank you. I adopt this as the result of the vote and determine that the members of this general meeting have granted the members of the executive board a discharge for their management in the financial year 27, and thank you for your trust. And the second part of this item, which is to grant discharge to the members of the supervisory board for their supervision of the management performed by the executive board in the financial year 2017. The general meeting is requested to grant discharge to the members of the supervisory board for the for the supervision of the management performed by the executive board in 2017. To explain, this discharge concerns all duties and tasks performed as clear from the annual report, the financial statements, disclosures at the general meeting, and other public disclosures prior to adopting the financial statements for 2017. Would anybody like the floor? If not, we will proceed to the vote, and I'll hand you over to the notary. We are voting on the discharge of the members of the supervisory board. Please cast your vote.
Dan sluit ik bij deze de stemming.
The vote is closed. And the result is displayed over to the chairman. Thank you very much. I'm adopting this result as the result of the vote and determine that the members of the general meeting have granted discharge to the members of the supervisory board for their supervision of the management performed by the executive board in the financial year 2017, and thank you for your trust in us. Next, agenda item 7, that's corporate governance, especially the implementation of the new corporate governance code, first of all, and after that we'll talk about amending the profile for the supervisory board. First, implementation of the new corporate governance code. On 8 December 2016, the new Dutch corporate governance code was published and it subsequently took effect on 1 January 2017. Companies are expected to submit to the general meeting the outline of their corporate governance structure and compliance with this code. Information about this topic appears on page 111, 113 of the integrated report and features on BAM's website. The website includes a chart of how BAM intends to or does comply with the principles and best practices in the code. BAM believes that this company complies with the principles and best practices in the code. I am now opening the floor to questions. Are there any questions about this topic? If not, we'll move on to agenda item 7B, which is the amendment of the supervisory board profile. In conformity with Dutch law, any amendment of the supervisory board should be discussed with the general meeting and with the Works Council. Based on the implementation of this new code, the profile has been amended to align with BAM's strategic agenda. The profile has been complemented to reflect desired knowledge and experience in construction, as well as in IT and information technology and the corresponding organizational transformation. The profile already reflected the objective to employ at least 30% women, and for the record, pursuit of diversity means that we also want to have at least 30% men in this company. Well, you never know. Unfortunately, the joke was inaudible. In keeping with the implementation of the new corporate governance code in 2017, the supervisory board adopted the new profile in November 17. Subject to input from the general meeting and BAM's Central Works Council. The Works Council has stated that they have no comments. Do you have any questions or comments about the profile? Now is your opportunity.
Dan stel ik vast dat er verder geen vragen of opmerkingen zijn over dit onderwerp en dat de algemene vergadering.
No questions or comments about this topic. The general meeting has taken note of the amended supervisory board profile. Now on to agenda item 8, the executive board composition, more specifically the reappointment of Mr. Eric Box as a member of the executive board. In the press release on 21 January 2018, the company mentioned the meeting on the executive board that will arise after this meeting because Mr. Box will step down upon the end of his term of appointment. I think it should read 21 February 2018. In my text, says the speaker, Mr. Box has notified the supervisory board that he would like to consider other endeavors and therefore does not wish to be eligible for a four-year reappointment to the executive board. Reappointment for a single year will safeguard continuity and a proper transfer of responsibilities with a view to the announced resignation of Mrs. Menson from the executive board as of 1 July 2018. The supervisory board is therefore recommending that Mr. Box be reappointed for 1 year. The Central Works Council has stated their support for this nomination as the member of the executive board and CEO at BAM. Mr. Box has contributed to developing and implementing the Back in Shape program, the strategic agenda, and the tender stage gate process, and has also figured prominently in improving working capital. See the brief CV of Mr. Box in the explanatory notes to this agenda. Mr. Box is a Dutch national citizen and is 60 years old. The highlights of his management agreement with BAM have been posted on the website. He does not hold any shares in BAM at present. This is your opportunity to make any remarks or ask questions. Mr. Dings and Mr. Den Oude. First, we'll hear from Mr. Dings. I'm still Henk Dings, and I would like to know how certain it is that Mr. Box would still be with us at the shareholders' meeting next April, or if he gets a wonderful offer, would he also simply leave in July? Because you can never nail somebody down, but in what measure has Mr. Box committed to staying with BAM for the entire year? And if he wants to leave anyway, perhaps we'd be better off looking for a successor now, and then it wouldn't be a problem if he didn't stay the entire year. I'm not insisting that he needs to leave. What is his commitment? It's good that you mentioned that last point. We'll get back to that in a moment. Mr. Den Oude. Okay. A one-year appointment is unusual. Perhaps that's a new practice at BAM as well. But as Mr. Ding said, if Mr. Box wants to leave, does it make sense to appoint him for 1 year? And that raises a lot of other questions. Wasn't there a strong internal candidate? Isn't BAM trying to cultivate talent? Perhaps you could explain that as well. Thank you very much for these questions. Are we confident that Mr. Box would stay on until next year's shareholders meeting? Of course, we don't have a guarantee about anybody. Anybody can give notice. Both BAM and Mr. Box had this option. But we've agreed that the contract cannot be terminated before 1 January 2019 in any case. Mr. Box is very committed to BAM and wants to guarantee a smooth transition to the next stage. So I'm fully confident that in the coming year with us, he will be fully dedicated to the firm. Next, the question from Mr. Den Oude, whether a one-year appointment is a novelty. Well, it's not common practice in the Netherlands, but as you know, in the UK, appointments are by definition for 1 year at a time. So we may be following a trend in that respect, but that's not our intention. Does it make sense to appoint it for 1 year? We believe it is for two reasons. First, it enhances continuity of management, which I think is exceptionally important. And second, in the past 4 years, Mr. Box has demonstrated that he's a strong contributor to BAM, and we're delighted that we can continue that for 1 year. Does BAM cultivate talent internally? Absolutely. But considering the changes on the executive board, I think it's important to keep that continuity. And that's why I'm delighted that Mr. Box is willing to stay with us for another year. I hope this answers your questions. And if there are other questions or comments, then the supervisory board hereby recommends that Mr. Box be reappointed to the executive board for 1 year. Let's open the vote on this reappointment, and I'll hand you over to the notary. We're going to vote on reappointing Mr. Box. Please cast your vote.
Dan sluit ik nu de stemming.
The vote is closed. And the result is displayed over to the chairman. 99.94%. Eric.
Dank u voor het vertrouwen.
Ik neem de.
Thank you. I'll adopt this result as the outcome of the vote and determine that your meeting has reappointed Mr. Box as a member of the executive board. And also, after the applause, also on behalf of the supervisory board, I thank you for your trust and congratulate Mr. Box on his reappointment and thank him for his commitment and availability to BAM. That takes us to agenda item 9, which also comprises two sections. 9A concerns the issue and granting of rights to acquire ordinary shares and cumulative preference shares. At the general meeting is requested to designate the executive board for an 18-month period starting today as the body authorized to issue and or grant rights to acquire ordinary shares and or cumulative preference shares subject to the approval of the supervisory board up to a maximum of 10% of the number of ordinary shares and cumulative preference shares outstanding at the time of the general meeting. You'll have noticed that this instruction deviates from the text in previous years. Based on conversations with shareholders, we decided that the additional 10% in the event of a merger, acquisition, or strategic partnership will no longer be requested. The initial 10% being requested here enables the company to act quickly if necessary. At present, the company does not envisage a specific goal. We believe it also serves the interest of the shareholders to grant this authorization because it gives the company the means to act quickly, and otherwise it might take too much time and there might be undesirable disclosures. I assume that you can rely on the executive and supervisory boards dealing responsibly according to the interests of shareholders. If this authorization is granted, it will replace the one granted last year. You may ask questions now. I see that there are no questions about this topic and propose that we open the vote, and I'll hand you over to the notary. We're going to vote about the authorization of the right to issue shares. Please cast your vote.
Dan sluit ik nu de stemming.
The vote is closed. And the result is displayed. I'll hand you over to the chairman. Thank you. I am adopting this result as the outcome of the vote and determine that your meeting has designated the executive board as authorized to acquire ordinary shares and grant rights as explained at this agenda item now. 9B. That's restricting or excluding preemptive rights upon issuing, respectively granting rights to acquire ordinary shares. The general meeting is requested to designate the executive board for 18 months starting today as the body authorized two, subject to the approval of the Supervisory Board, exclude respectively, restrict the preemptive rights upon issuing of and or granting rights to acquire ordinary shares up to a maximum of 10% of the number of ordinary shares mentioned at agenda item 9A. Are there any questions or comments about this agenda item? If not, I note that since there are no questions at this time, I will hand you over to the notary to open the vote. Now we're going to vote about restricting or excluding preemptive rights. Please cast your vote.
Dan sluit ik.
The vote is closed. And the result has been displayed. Back to the chairman. Thank you very much, Mr. Notary. This agenda item is exceptional because it requires a weighted majority, because less than 50% of the shareholders is represented at this meeting. Therefore, a two-thirds majority is required to adopt this proposal, and the level is just over 75%, so that's the outcome of the vote. And I determine that your meeting has designated the executive board as authorized to restrict or exclude preemptive rights upon issuing, respectively, granting rights to acquire ordinary shares as described at this agenda item. Now, agenda item 10, authorizing the executive board to have the company acquire ordinary shares in the company's capital, treasury shares. The general meeting is requested to authorize the executive board for 18 months according to the law and subject to the approval of the supervisory board to acquire on the stock exchange or privately ordinary shares in the company's capital up to a maximum of 10% of the capital issued on the acquisition date at a price between 0 and 10% above the average closing price of the shares on Euronext Amsterdam during the five trading days immediately prior to the acquisition date of the shares. This authorization would replace the one granted last year if it's obtained. Are there any questions or comments about this proposal? If not, I'll hand you over to the notary for the vote. Now we're going to vote about the authorization to acquire and repurchase. Please cast your vote.
Dan sluit ik bij deze de stemming.
Vote is closed. And the result has been displayed over to the chairman. Thank you. I determine, after seeing this outcome of the vote, that you have authorized the executive board to have the company acquire ordinary shares in the company's capital, i.e. treasury shares, subject to the conditions explained in this agenda item. Next, agenda item 11, that concerns the reappointment of Ernst & Young Accountants, LLP, as external auditor responsible for auditing the 2019 financial statements. The general meeting is requested to reappoint Ernst & Young Accountants, LLP, as the external auditor responsible for auditing the 2019 financial statements as part of its consideration of the 2017 integrated report, including the financial statements. The supervisory board assessed the relationship with the external auditor based on a report from the executive board. Based on the above assessments and the good relations of the supervisory board with the external independent auditor, and given their expertise in constructions in general, their good relations with the construction industry in general and BAM in particular, EY is proposed to be reappointed for the next year to audit the 2019 financial statements of Koninklijke BAM. The reason that this is here is because the financial year 2019 would have been in progress for nearly 4 months if we waited until the next meeting to present this proposal for your consideration. Are there any questions or comments about this proposal? If not, I'll hand you over to the notary for the vote. Now we're going to vote about the reappointment of the auditor. Please cast your vote.
Dan sluit ik bij deze.
vote is closed. The result is displayed, and I'll hand you over to the chairman. I'm adopting this result as the outcome of the vote and determine that your meeting has reappointed Ernst & Young Accountants LLP as the external auditor responsible for auditing the 2019 financial statements of Koninklijke Bank. Now, that takes me to any other business.
Any other business? I can see two people putting their hands up. Please go ahead. Costa is my name. I've been a shareholder for many a year. And we've had the 7 lean years behind us now, I think. And everybody's been pretty honest and transparent, saying, well, things haven't gone well, it's been our fault. And this has happened yet again this year. But now that you've had these 7 lean years behind us, I do hope that you will be able to get money from the government, from the public authorities, to help the company move forward. I have to say, compliments for the shareholders' excursion that you arrange every year, because, I mean, we really appreciate that, and that encourages loyalty. But let's hope things will go better for BAM in the years to come. Thank you, says Mr. Noy, Mr. Costa, for those comments. Now, Mr. Rinks. No, I want to know one thing. Are we expecting a new AGM in the fall to appoint a new somebody on the board? Could we do that, though, after the results have been announced? Because really, that's not the way to do it. So, if you found a successor for Ms. Minson, then let's not keep it until April next. Says the chair, you've said that very well. You've perceived things extremely correctly. As soon as we've got a new CFO, we will, of course, organise an extraordinary AGM, and we won't wait for next year. Mr. Rinks jumps in and giving some dates. August is when the half-year figures come out. Listen, we are going to come out with a proposal for an extraordinary AGM once we've found a suitable candidate for appointment through the by the shareholders. Mr. Rink said, but if you've sorted somebody out, you could do it in June or in August. Mr. Rink shouldn't worry, says Mr. Noy. We will tell you. There's confusion here about whether the... and Mr. Rink is a humorous character. And Mr. Costa... 7 lean years, what do you think the CEO responds? Well, 2 or 3 years back when we started with the Back in Shape program, we simplified our structure, we streamlined and targeted our corporate culture. Together with a market now that seems to be much more favorable to us, and I agree with you, we will have our day. Thank you, Rob. Well, we come to the very last item on the agenda, that is the closing of the meeting. But there are a few things that I would wish to draw to your attention. In my presentation that I prepared, the short yearly report that you heard when we started, that we're going to stop that. Why are we going to stop that? Well, because it requires a huge efforts in order to produce it. And we see that the interest in it is relatively reduced. The chair was thinking of the board was thinking about sending it out to you next year. What would that mean? It would mean next year we will send you the annual report. But I hope that you will understand that the year after we're going to stop doing this because it requires a huge amount of effort to send it out, this report to you. Now, because the CEO has committed himself in this AGM, we shall do it. We shall honour his commitment. And my penultimate point relates to thanks directed to Ms. Tessa Mensen. Unfortunately, she can't be here today, as I explained, because she was deeply upset not to be here because it was her last opportunity to be at AGM. But I want to extend thanks that she has given and contributed over almost 6 years. As you will recall, at the beginning of that six-yearly period, it was a really hard time because, like all construction companies, we're still suffering huge repercussions from the financial crisis. She has done a huge amount helping the Back in Shape program, reducing our costs by 100 million, also made a contribution to reducing working capital, and as CFO, she played a quintessential role in the financing of BAM during this period of hard times and ensured that the financial position of the company remained robust. Tessa was extremely devoted to our company, and on behalf of the Supervisory Board and the Executive Board, and I think on behalf of you all as shareholders, to thank her for the contribution that she's made and wish her a swift recovery.
Meneer de voorzitter, het zou misschien...
Yeah, it would be nice, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the shareholders, to send her a bunch of flowers. The chairman thinks that's a good idea, and we'll do so. Last point. When you leave the room, please use your voting box. And when you hand over your voting slip, you will get a little present. And you will be able to sign up for the shareholders' excursion. The shareholders' excursion will take place on 26 September. That's a Wednesday this year. And shareholders only can come along. So I'd like to thank you for your presence here today and invite you for an aperitif. And we hope that all those following this AGM on the webcast are happy with what they've heard.